Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knock On Nation podcast show. Oh. Knock On Nation podcast show.
Hey, it's another episode of the Knock On Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks. That's JT Holton and Josh Rhubarb Brown. What's up, fellas?
How y'all doing out there in Knockahoma land?
Knocker Homer. Knocker Homer land. Hey, we won the series against the Marlins despite the fact we only have one pitcher. What can we say, fellas? It's a bright, sunshiny day.
Yeah. Old Ashley lost her bet again.
For those who may not know, we have
undefeated.
We have a longstanding bet with our friend Ashley, who is a Marlins fan, that anytime the Braves have played the Marlins in a series, the winner of the series has to change their avi for, 48 hours? 24 hours? I don't remember.
48 hours.
48 hours. That's right. And it's been so long since we lost because, Josh, we didn't lose at all last year. I don't think we lost a single series to the Marlins last year. And
I think we're undefeated.
And we didn't this year. So, yeah. I mean, she currently has a Nick Markakis picture with hearts all around it as her avi. Yeah. Nice.
Avatar. That's right.
For her picture on Twitter, for those of you who aren't Twitterers. So, There's that. Robbie Erlin, is it too early to call Robbie Erlin the Braves MVP? I mean, he went four scoreless, right?
One of the greatest pitchers I've ever seen. I've watched baseball for a long time, guys, since I was knee-high to a shoe fly. I mean, I grew up watching the greats, Peter Moylan, Anibal Sanchez.
Tim Spoonie
Barber. Let me tell y'all something. Yeah, that guy.
Jaime Garcia.
Irvin Santana. Let me tell y'all something.
Smell baseball.
Let me tell y'all experts listening a thing or two. Irwin Santana or Erlin, as they call him in the streets.
Irvin?
One of the greatest pitchers I've ever seen. Robbie Erlin. That's what I meant to say.
Oh, that
Robbie
Erlin.
Is that his name?
Erlin. Yeah, you called him Erlin Santana, so I didn't know what you were saying. I've had
a couple of drinks tonight. My wife got some Yingling. I don't even like Yingling, but it's easy to drink. I don't know. Robbie Erlin, fantastic.
He was. I was just relieved that a pitcher in a Braves uniform not named Mike Soroka or Max Fried could put the ball over the plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of been a little bit of a challenge. Recently.
Mm-hmm. Either that or they're putting it right down the middle of the plate, and that's not, outstanding.
I've
been calling him Robbie Merlin because he was a wizard over the weekend.
Merlin Erlin. Okay.
And also much better than his first pitch as an Atlanta Brave, which was a grand slam. So things have improved dramatically for Mr. Erlin.
That's true. That was a cheap grand slam, though, man. That was cheap. A couple of corrections from last week's show. Let it never be said that we don't correct our errors. I think I ascribed Zach Plesac as Dan Plesac's son. It's actually his nephew, I believe. And and I also think I ascribed that home run to that grand slam to our good friend, who's no longer at the major leagues, Sean Newcomb.
Well, I mean, he took three of the earned runs.
Right. And that's my fault. But either way, that's a little bit of a cheap home run. Anyway, tonight, Tukey actually pitched a little better than the scoreboard's going to show for him. But, man.
Okay.
He did. Okay.
I love Mr.
Greater Good Speech. Mr. Greater Good Speech is going to now go into his laughter over Tukey.
I love that. This is what baseball fans do. They'll do this and they go, he'll give up five homers. And go, well, you know, if it wasn't for those five mistakes, it was a great outing.
It was by far the walks that were the problem. I mean, I got to be honest. Yeah. It was the walks.
That's been his problem since 2016.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
He's
made more people walk than Billy Graham. It's amazing. But that's the thing is, it's sometimes it can be, there are things where stats can be misleading and it's not as bad as it looks. But
yeah, I was not watching Mr. Freed. Yeah, I was not watching the game, but a lot of people said the umpire was squeezing him hard tonight. So I don't know. I didn't.
Aww,
like I said,
that's cute.
I wasn't watching. It is kind of cute, but
I was watching it. He looked terrible.
He was getting sandwiched. He was getting sandwiched by the ump. That's why they call him Tukey Croissant.
Oh, nice. JT, wow. Well, before we jump into the full thing, fellas, I wanted to start this week off with Stump the Chumps. Are you guys ready to be stumped?
Is it Robbie Erlin?
It is not Robbie Erlin, but that's a strong guess. Strong guess. This former Atlanta Brave ended his 16-year career with the Atlanta Braves. And that's about all I'm going to tell you.
Okay. 16 years.
16-year career.
Solid, long career.
Yeah.
Not many people get 16 years.
Let me rephrase. This World Series winning 16-year career Major League Baseball player ended his 16-year career with the Atlanta Braves.
So, and he's won a World Series.
Okay. Yes, correct. All right, who's up first, Josh or JT?
Well, Josh won last time, so I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
Was this a pitcher?
No, you won last. No, Josh did win because Josh went.
Josh
Derek
got Derek
Lowe. That's right.
Derek Lowe. Yeah.
Josh randomly guessed the biggest douchebag he could think of and won the show. Oh man. All right, JT. Was it a pitcher? This person was not a pitcher for the Atlanta Braves. Would you like to make a guess, or would you like to yield the floor?
I might as well throw one out there. 16-year career ended it with the Braves. Ken Caminiti.
Incorrect. Good guess, though.
He won a World Series, so.
Josh Brown.
Was this player an outfielder?
He was. This player was actually an outfielder.
Was this player Garrett Anderson?
It was not. Strong guess, though. Strong guess, though. Giving more clues for you. This player, in his career of 16 years, had 183 stolen bases.
Ended his career with the Braves. 16 years, won a World Series, stole a decent amount of bases.
Yeah, I mean, 183, 16 years, that's not, like, not blowing the doors down, but that's more than you would see most guys steal, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean, decent amount. That means he probably had a 30 steal year when he was younger, you know, probably didn't steal much when he was older. 16 years. Okay. You said World Series. Now, he did not win the World Series in 95 with Atlanta, correct?
No, he did not. That is correct.
So he won it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Finished his career with the Braves. Was an outfielder. Raul Mondesi. You won a World Series.
Incorrect. Not Raul Mondesi.
Didn't play 16 years.
Josh Brown.
Did this player have really great eyes?
Give me a moment to speculate upon this.
I know where you're going.
They're strong eyes, but I don't think you would consider them his best feature. But I could be wrong.
Oh, really?
But they're good eyes. They're not bad eyes.
But they're not his best feature?
I don't know. I would not look at this player and think, wow, eyes. But maybe. I don't know.
Do some look at him and are like, man, he's got the best eyes in baseball?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So it's not Marcotte?
It is not Marcotte. That is correct.
Let's see.
Was that your guess?
Could it be relatively fast-ish? I mean, 16 years... 16-year career. Holy crap, I don't know.
All right. This former Atlanta Brave was, let's see, I'm trying to find the best information for you here. He was drafted in the 40th round of the 1982 amateur draft by the Texas Rangers out of Lake Howell High School in Winter Park, Florida.
Park, Florida. I know Lake Howell High School. I know that. 82.
Wow, he's older than I thought. Then okay, I was thinking the newer guy. Huh.
Hmm.
Well, daggum.
So that puts him around his last year being around the early 2000s, roughly. So I would say.
Yeah.
Was this guy, did he play just 1 year for the Braves?
That is correct. He did just play 1 year for the Atlanta Braves.
Oh, it's one of those.
Oh, yeah.
But it was not a short year. It was a nearly whole year, almost a whole year.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's one of those, like, you'll forget they even played. Oh,
yes.
Yeah,
probably.
I bet you guys don't even realize he played for Atlanta. I did not before I did the research. So,
oh, one of those guys.
But he played. Like I'm not. He's not like a bench guy that didn't ever play. So he played. It's just.
And it's not Bobby Bonilla because he didn't play.
Nope.
He didn't play.
I like how Josh like half guesses. He's like, it's not this person. But then I'm going to give another guess afterwards.
Dips his toes in there. Uh-oh. Oh, see, I totally forgot about Bobby Bo. Golly, I don't know, man. That's my neck of the woods, Lake Howell. Wherever that is, the Silverhawks of Lake Howell High School, by the way. Home of the Silverhawks. Rico Bronya. No idea.
It is not Rico Bronya. Strong guess, though. Strong guess. But no, you know, it is
he
not.
He really played corner outfield. He was whatever.
This is one of those things I know I've seen it before, and you're going to tell us, and we're like, oh, yeah, now I remember. Did this player play for the Cardinals ever?
Ooh, let me look. Just 1 second. This player did not play for the Cardinals.
Hmm.
In fact, I'll go ahead.
Is it, it's not Reggie, what's his name?
He played for everybody.
It is not Reggie, what's his name? All right, here's another clue, since you asked. He played for, let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. He played for 10 Major League Baseball teams.
Good night. Okay. Well traveled.
Mm-hmm.
Did we establish he's a corner outfielder?
I don't think we established anything except that he was not a pitcher.
Not a pitcher.
Well, you said he's an outfielder.
Okay, yes. I'm sorry. I didn't remember that question, but yes, that is correct. Or at least for much of his career, he was.
Hmm.
Was this player a black guy?
This wow. player was not of white descent. He was not a Caucasian.
Caucasian? Huh. Well, color me confused.
Hmm. Well, we didn't color you white because that's not who this guy was. So, yeah. Do you need more clues? We're approaching the give up point here, fellas. I got to be honest.
I mean, I'm thrown off by the fact that you said you didn't even remember him playing here. So I'm just like, who could it be? Mm-hmm. There's always those people that play like 1 year, you know. 20 years ago, almost. But, I mean, with his career, I mean, I'm going to know who it is. My goodness, like, Carl Everett played for us or something like that? I have no idea.
No, it's not him. So, yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, are we giving up? Or do we need more questions?
Give me one more clue. If I can't get after one more clue, I give up.
All right. Let's see if I can get a good clue for you.
Like how Silverhawk is going to get past Beer.
He played his last active game October the 7th, 2001.
Wow, still reeling from 9/11 at that point. Man, I watched a lot of that year.
To add to that, I will say, so that you don't feel like I'm cheating you, he played in 120 games and had 259 plate appearances for the Atlanta Braves that year. So not an extremely small sample size, but, you know.
Yeah. He was part of that famous Mets-Braves series post 9/11.
Yeah, it was Piazza homer.
So I'm trying to picture the hugs. The hugs everybody gave. There's
well,
Chipper.
Mike Piazza hugged a lot of men.
Piazza was there.
I will give one more. This is the giveaway clue. If you don't get it,
okay. Then
I'm going to tell you that because this is the giveaway. He did not win the World Series as a player.
Oh. Wait a minute.
You don't know.
Was it? It wasn't Rafael Belli. No, 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 no.
No. It was not Rafael Belli.
He was definitely not. He was not an outfielder.
He wasn't still playing in 2001, not for the Braves.
Daggummit. Oh, I totally know who it is, though. We're gonna know who it is.
Yeah, let's go ahead and spill it. Let's see.
Are you ready? Oh, I've stumped the chumps.
I need to know.
It is none other than Washington Nationals manager Dave Martinez.
Oh, what a cheap shot.
Dave Martinez. I would not have guessed Dave Martinez played 16 years.
Yeah, I vaguely remember him playing.
I didn't know he played for the Braves. I remember Dennis Martinez at the end of his career playing in Atlanta, but I don't remember Dave Martinez.
Dave Martinez. Yeah. I mean, if he played in 120 games, guys, in our prime, like 2001, that was the year I graduated high school, that's old enough we should be aware. So, like, I didn't feel like that was cheating.
We definitely, it wasn't like we were two and wouldn't have known. Like, that's
right,
you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
But again, you probably would not remember the fifth outfielder played 1 year.
He played 120 games that year.
Yeah, 120
games. He hit 287
games
that year. Age 36, hit 287. I mean, he was like
He came back in 2002 and was going to play for the Braves again and had a knee injury and ended up sitting out the whole year and retired.
Also, if you had said Washington Nationals manager, I might have gotten that in three guesses, maybe. I thought Davy Johnson or Matt Williams was still there. I'm not really sure.
I wonder, did he win a World Series under Joe Maddon at Tampa Bay?
No, they didn't win the World Series.
Tampa Bay did? Okay.
The Phillies beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
That was the year
the
Phillies won.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Did he win? Was he with the Cubs when they won the World Series?
I thought he was already in Washington, was the bench coach, and took over when...
Because he went with Joe Maddon,
Okay.
That's the reason I wasn't sure, like, at what point... I don't remember.
I can't tell you.
Okay. I mean, you don't have to tell me, but you know.
I don't know who else was on the other than
He worked for Tampa Bay in 06 and 07. He interviewed for managerial position in Toronto in 2010 and the Cleveland Indians. Let's see. After the 2012 season, Martinez was considered for the Astros job. Instead, Bo Porter got... During the 13 season, Martinez interviewed for the Cubs job, which went to Rick Renteria, and the Washington Nationals manager position, which went to Matt Williams. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I think he actually... Let's see. Oh, yeah, December 4th, he was hired as the bench coach for the Cubs under Maddon. And that was in 2014. Was that the year the Cubs won it all? Yeah, that in 2016. In 2016, Martinez was part of the Cubs coaching staff that led the team to winning the 2016 World Series. So he's actually got two rings. One as a bench coach and one as a Washington National, unfortunately. So
Crazy.
Hey, you want to talk? Let's talk a little football first, fellas. SEC releases what? Schedules. NCAA says you can't play football. SEC basically released the schedule to say, screw you. If the SEC or any other conference does play football as of right now, it would appear it will lead to a confrontation between that conference and the NCAA.
Wait. I didn't hear this. So the NCAA basically came out and said no, and then the SEC drops their schedule?
All on the same day. Yes. I think the SEC technically dropped the schedule first, and then the NCAA marched out their little doctor who said, we can't play. And
oh, my God.
So the NCAA has said any attempt to play football would lead to a direct confrontation with basically the front office of the NCAA. Any thoughts on this, JT?
NCAA is powerless anyway. The trophy they give out is not even an NCAA trophy. So they have no teeth at all. They have no policing power. They can't even subpoena schools that are under their own investigations. The NCAA is a fraud. And what you're seeing is eventually it's going to lead to the Power Five breaking off and just doing their own thing. Call it the football. That's why it's called the Football Bowl Subdivision. It's not even called the, it's called the NCAA March Madness Tournament. That's put on by the NCAA. Yeah. The NCAA doesn't put on the college football playoff. They have nothing to do with it. They Mark Emmert is the president of NCAA. He is. It's like being the mayor of Washington D.C. Like you, what does that mean? You can do anything, and that's basically it's them trying to look important. It's them trying to look like they matter, and people are finding out that it's like the man behind the curtain. There really is no wizard. The NCAA is.
Yeah,
they're hoping against hope that the Power Five schools, the ones that make the money, don't go out fully on their own and just do their own thing regardless of what the NCAA does. But each conference has their own TV contract and all these other things.
I wondered if this is the thing that, like, instigates the break finally. You know, like, if the SEC decides we're going to play football, and there's some pressure that despite the Big Ten claiming they're going to cancel their season, that I actually read something today that said Justin Fields' legal moves that he has made has made it so that the Big Ten may still have a season, which is wild, and I don't understand it all fully, but basically he's threatened to basically sue them for not giving him the opportunity to do what they told him he was going to be able to do.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean,
I don't think in the long run anything will come of that because honestly, like Justin Fields can sit out this entire year and prep for the draft and still be a top five pick.
I think it's the point, right? And I think what the NCAA should be scared of right now is I think this has galvanized players more than almost any other subject has towards unionizing.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that this is what's done it, but it does feel like players are more united now saying, let us play than ever before against the NCAA and against their conferences and the leadership of those conferences, you know. And that should be scary, definitely scary to the NCAA, because my thought is eventually when the players unionize or whatever they end up becoming, whether it's technically a union or not, I think you're going to see lawsuits against the NCAA for previously existing rules, and I think the NCAA is going to basically prove that it's a Ponzi scheme, because that's all it really is. Let's be 100% honest. It's 100% a Ponzi scheme.
This is crazy, man.
Yeah, it is. It's a little bit hypocritical for the NCAA to say, hey, we think it's dangerous for you to play football. And these players are like, look, you've never paid us a dime, and people are out here breaking their – next, to play. We're putting our livelihoods on the line every year. And now you're going to tell us it's too dangerous. We know it's dangerous. And yet we're out here playing it, and you guys aren't even paying us. And you've seen just throughout the NIL stuff, the name, image, and likeness that the NCAA has since allowed. Because that came because of the lawsuits on why you can't have college football video games anymore, things like that, because the players have a point. I'm the one making the, you know, nobody made the number three jersey at Georgia valuable except Todd Gurley. You know, that's who that is.
It's never made sense because if, JT, if you and I were in college and we were sophomores, right? Just because we attend the University of Georgia, if we started a podcast that blew up and became a multi-million dollar podcast, you know, fingers crossed, then we would never be able, like, they wouldn't be able to make us stop being Georgia students or punish us for starting. Like, we wouldn't be able to lose a scholarship with Georgia.
But they can make you stop playing football because you're making money in another way, which is insane.
Right, which is insane. I mean, there's times that these kids are making money, and it has nothing to do with football, like, at all. And these kids are getting punished for it, much less. I mean, maybe you can make an argument on the football side a little bit of, hey, the school gave you the platform. The school gave you some of this stuff. You know, it's yes, it's your talent, but we gave you the stage, the equipment, the training, all that kind of stuff. But some of this stuff is like just flat out, the kid is creative, did something completely unrelated to football whatsoever, and the NCAA says, nope, can't do that. Not going to happen. You don't get to play football anymore. And I'm like, what? What? It makes no sense.
Yeah, NCAA is a nonsensical organization that doesn't have any sort of consistency with any rules they ever hand down. And it's just this big bloated entity that, and as far as football goes, has no reason to exist. Now,
it's
with
the
other sports,
thing,
maybe so.
This is probably a crazy statement, and it's hyperbole to some extent. But, fellas, I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Is NCAA football especially, the closest thing to slavery that exists in the United States today?
I mean, look, people have made that argument. Whenever somebody brings up slavery, they're like, well, you know, there'll be an African-American player that says this is modern-day slavery, and people clutch their pearls. Like, how could you say that? To me, if it was my son and you're putting in the work and you're putting in the effort, if someone offers you some money to play, son, you better take it. And if you get in trouble, well, I ain't gonna be mad at you, you know, because I think it's crap. If you're old enough to vote and you're old enough to pick up a gun and fight for the country, then I don't think it's fair. Now things are changing, guys. To be fair, guys do get more stipends now. I think when people hear that, they think of the kids saying they're ungrateful. Yeah, they're getting a free college education.
Right.
They're getting a better overall student experience than your average student because they're getting tutors and they get a personal learning center and they get a lot of advantages being on the football team that your average everyday student doesn't get.
Not to mention the social
aspect
as well.
Of it. Yeah. And look, if you're a former Georgia player, for instance, I mean, if you make a name for yourself, even if you'll be well taken care of in some regard
and
throughout
let me
your
be,
life, that goes a long
way.
That's
why I said this is hyperbole because obviously I'm not equating this to literal slavery where you would be beaten if you don't do your jobs and those kinds of things. I'm simply saying the closest thing to working without really being paid for it.
And without having a unionized voice.
Yes.
No one speaking
out. No recourse.
Out,
right.
No recourse. Yeah, no one speaking out on your better half. The NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NFL, all these players that are playing these sports throughout a certain degree of danger all have a unionized voice that can do what they consider to be in their best interest. So we can vote on whether or not we want to do A, B, or C. College football, there is nobody speaking up for the players' behalf. There's no Tony
Clark. Jay Billis out here by himself.
Jay Billis is about the closest thing you've got to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, is it hyperbole? Of course it is. But, I mean, in a sense, they are busting their butt to make money for everyone except for themselves.
And it's not like just a little bit of money. It's like obscene
money.
That's where the slavery part kind of fits in. Is like these guys are doing stuff that's raking in billions of dollars with a B for the NCAA.
Yeah,
you know?
And I don't want to get Cousin Kent on my case by picking on Dabo Swinney. But when a guy like Dabo, who makes over $7 million a year, I think it might be more than that. Just in salary, says if we start paying players and I think I'm done with college athletics, it's not for me anymore. It rings a bell. A, that's a tough sell on the recruiting trail, but also it rings a bit hypocritical when the reason you are worth $9 million a year, $8 million, whatever it is, he's up in one of the top five highest paid coaches in football and with good reasons, a damn good coach. But it rings a bit hypocritical because the reason you are worth that much. And the reason you've won national championships is because of players like Deshaun Watson, players like Sammy Watkins, players like those guys who earned absolutely zilch, zero, for busting their butt and winning championships for nothing but their own pride.
Sweeney gets 8.25 base with incentives that make it higher, and by 2027, it's a $10 million base. Right. So, yeah.
And look, I'm not against coaches being paid, because when you look at the money that Clemson football brings in for Clemson, it's worth it. If he was the CEO of a company bringing that much, he'd be underpaid.
It's an infinitesimal, investment for Clemson, but it's still a lot more than the players.
It's hard to say we don't have money to lend to our players when you see the kind of money that the coaching staff gets paid and the kind of money they bring in from the TV contract. Now, I don't think players should get paid just on a salary amount, because that's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah.
How do you decide how the backup punter gets paid, you know, or the third string quarterback at Georgia as opposed to the third string quarterback at Rutgers? How do you decide those things? That's a mess. Yeah. But a fair compromise is the name, image, and likeness, where if someone offers you money for your autograph, let the market dictate what that's worth. And if someone says, I'll pay you $5,000 to come sign some pictures for me, you should be able to make that $5,000 on your free time.
And let's not pretend like pretty much every school in any of the Power Five conferences, with the exception of a very small few, couldn't afford to pay whatever they wanted for players to come play.
Oh, sure. Players are getting played. Let's be up front here. If you don't think your school is cheating, pull your head out of the sand. They absolutely are. Now, does your head coach know about it? He may not. I mean, if he's smart, he'll make sure he doesn't know about it. Players are getting played. They're getting taken care of, left and right.
There's a reason that you can't walk into an Athens car dealership and there not be at least three employees that were once Georgia football players. There's a reason for that. You know, it's not just that Georgia trains really good car salesmen. You know, that's not how this works. So
come to Georgia. We get you. We don't send you to the NFL, but you'll work at a Nissan dealership in Bogart.
Speaking of the NFL, Josh, you're going to enjoy this one. Jerry, the Showman Jones, right, king of the Big Top, has said that he expects to have at least 10,000 fans per game in seats for Dallas Cowboys games this year at the stadium. The NFL has come out and said, not happening. Who do you think will win between Jerry Jones and the NFL?
I hope Jerry Jones does. I just want this election to be over and the coronavirus to be canceled, you know, because it's I'm done with it. I'm just done with it. I'm done.
Yeah, coronavirus is sad, man. I lost a really good friend this week to coronavirus, and two other really good friends are in the hospital right now with dismal outlooks for their future. So it sucks, you know, especially if you're over the age of 60. That being said, like, I think if you're under the age of 40 and you want to go watch football, you should be able to go watch football.
Well,
but I agree.
I mean, look, it's all going to come down to who's willing to assume liability.
Yep.
You know, if the NFL has a way to put all the liability on Jerry Jones and CYA their way out of it, then why not? But
because it's political. I don't think they'll do it even if they could transfer all the liability to him. Because
why is it political? You think it's political?
Absolutely, it's political. I mean, like, not allowing fans in stands is part of a political. Political in this sense. It's not Democrat or Republican political. It's political in the sense of it's cultural political correctness, cultural PR, if you want to put it. Like, they want to look and present themselves a certain way as. That and they really don't care about keeping people safe from corona. I mean, 100%, I don't believe that's the thing behind it at all.
I agree.
I think the idea behind running a different national anthem, doing stuff like, you know, allowing players to kneel before games, doing a giant ceremony for the flag before the game. I don't care which side of this you're on. All of that is a PR move to try to hook in a particular type of fan and present your brand a particular way. And I think COVID decisions most COVID decisions are based on PR far more than they are on science or on actually caring whether someone gets sick or not.
Right. You have to give the appearance that you care and that you're not a bunch of barbarians that are just going forward, science be damned, and we're just going to do what we want to do. You can't look reckless. I think there's a lot of that.
I want to hear Ken's take. Ken, I've had family that have had it. I haven't lost anybody from it,
mm-hmm.
but you have. And so what are your unfiltered thoughts? Do you see a story like this and you're like, you know, good on Jerry Jones, you know, I hope Jerry wins. Or are you like a little more nuanced? Are you like, I think that some people should get in and there should be some regulations? Or do you think it should just be like, open the floodgates and if you feel safe, go. If you don't, then stay home.
No, I mean, I don't feel like open the floodgates. I think it's the same way. I think that, yes, we live in America where there's lots of freedoms, but you're still not free to run around butt naked. You know, you're still not free to go around and just shoot anyone you want to. There's still limitations to things that you have to do for the health and safety of society. I think that you can go way too far into trying to be safe, and therefore I think trying to, like, first of all, I don't think
like,
there's any,
like, save everybody, save everything.
Absolutely, that's insane. You know,
we've talked
like
about it
before. I don't think that's reasonable. I don't think that's even logical. I don't think you can shut down a $1 trillion economy more than 2 weeks. I don't even know that you can shut it down 2 weeks and not expect like dire consequences of that. So for me, there's parts of it that's like, you just can't do that. That being said, I don't have a problem with strongly encouraging health stuff that we actually think science backs up and supports. You know, so mask wearing when you know you're going to be around people that might be sick, that might be high risk, I don't have a problem with kind of almost requiring that to some extent. I don't eat breakfast with all the old guys that I eat with in the morning out of safety for them. Like, I don't, because my kids are in school. There's a limited amount of time. I expect I'm probably going to get the virus at some point because of just all the exposures we have. And I don't want those guys dying because I accidentally gave it to them, you know, and me being like an asymptomatic carrier. That being said, like, I still go to the grocery store. I still live life. I just make decisions where I don't expose people that I feel like are at high risk. You know, does that make sense? Like, it's nuanced. It's not as simple as just saying no mask or all mask. Like, I think people that say everyone should have to wear a mask all the time, I think that's stupid. You know, I don't think you can give a national mandate and expect people to actually follow it or do it. That being said, I do think you can mandate, like, if you're going to go into tightly packed areas, you should have to wear a mask. You know, I don't know. Like, it's nuanced. I don't like seeing people die, you know, especially people I love. Kind of sucks. And my opinion on that's kind of shifted, you know? Like, and if you have a different opinion, I'm not going to be mad at you. Like, I'm not, like, sitting here all bitter at somebody who disagrees or has a different opinion on me, of me.
No.
On that, you know. That's just, nuance sucks in America because we're not good at it, because everyone's trying to make a PR statement more than they are really an actual valid decision in their life. I think we talked about this last week, Josh. Like, most people don't actually care. They just,
we don't
they're,
care.
They're
we
doing
just want to be
something
correct,
to look politically correct one way or the other. And basically be tribal and say, this is who I am. Look at my flag. I wear a mask all the time because that's who I am. I'm a mask wearer, as if that matters to anybody for any reason whatsoever, you know, because we're tribal and the mask, you know, identifies us as which tribe we're a part of. Yeah.
That is correct. Yeah.
What do you think, Josh? Like, I know you, I know your Twitter presence is very libertarian, but I don't know, like, what's your actual feeling?
It is, and that's kind of how I feel about masks and all of this. But I do understand that you know, people are dumb, so you have to regulate some things, and you have to there are laws, and yes, you can't run around naked and shoot people on stuff for sure. But I look at the data, and it just seems like if you're under 60, I mean, you're you know, chances are, I mean, super slim. You're going to, you know, succumb to this thing. And so I don't know, man. I you know, first of all, I want football.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah.
And it's not that I just want football. I think that, you know, Trevor Lawrence, I think what he said was correct. I really do. I mean, if they're safer in that environment than they would be at home. And so I think at the very least, at the very, very, very least, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and those guys are completely silly for making this stupid political decision. And
yeah,
those kids should play football.
I think the question is, what about the fans? All the worry that they've had at MLB level, you know, with young, healthy guys, they're worried about them getting a virus that's going to make them feel bad for a few days, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, then the question is, well, Josh, what about the fans? Well, I don't know, man. Maybe this is cold hearted and maybe this is stupid and maybe this is just an incorrect way to view this. But I just think that, and part of it too is I don't know what to believe anymore, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, and maybe I shouldn't say it because I just have one of my best friends, you, tell me that you've lost people from this. And so, I mean, I should be sensitive to that. And I am sensitive to that. But on a broader scale, I don't know what to believe. I don't know. I'm in Georgia this past weekend. I'm going out and about. You know, I'm out and about in Dallas and the Northwest Georgia area, and life is normal. We're going out to eat. We're hanging out. But then you open Facebook, and you know, you got a friend on Facebook that posts an article from like Axios or or the AJC, and it's like, today's the highest daily death toll in Georgia since this pandemic started. It just seems weird. It's like, is it really? It's crazy. And then my sister-in-law works at Emory, right? So she's got a pretty intelligent perspective on this because she works at Emory, you know, perhaps the number one hospital system in Georgia. And Chrissy's very you know, she's pretty nuanced on this, and she's like, look, it's definitely real. I mean, we have patients.
Yeah.
But our number of patients has gone down significantly, you know, and I mean, I feel safe, and I think we're going
to
be okay.
So the weird thing for me, like just to jump in and add to what you're saying, in our county's in a hotspot area right now. So we're like hitting our peak. We've had the most cases, the most infections, everything going on right now. Like, this is our pinnacle. This is the thing I'm not sure about. I don't know if mask wearing would actually protect it, would have actually protected anybody I know that got sick from it.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to talk about. Yeah,
I won't say it wouldn't have. You won't say it
publicly. Yeah, I won't say
it wouldn't have, but
yeah.
One of them, I know he would never have worn a mask. Like, he's just the guy, he wouldn't do it, you know? He's just not going to do it. The others, they were being, like, kind of hyper-spiritual, we're believing God for this thing, you know, going to protect us. And so they were actually, like, at a prayer group together, and that's where, like, 7 out of 9 of them got infected. My mom was actually exposed but did not get infected. And so it's kind of a weird thing to, like, talk about and think, because, like, who am I to tell those people that they can't also practice their faith, do the things that they believe? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a person of faith, so for me, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, I mean, if you believe that, do what you believe God told you to do, you know, and trust Him to take care of you, and He'll take care of you one way or the other, you know. That sounds harsh and mean, but I guess, like, at some point, we all kind of get to make those decisions and figure out how to face those things, you know. I don't know. It's weird. I do think, as Americans, and sadly, a lot of Christians are super scared of death. Like, we are scared to death of dying. And that's a new thing in America. Like, I don't think people that, like, the guys that were at D-Day, did they want to die? No. Were they scared of dying? Probably somewhat. But, like, they still rode the boats. You know what I'm saying? Like, they still charged into danger because dying was not the thing they were most scared of. There was something scarier to them. And I don't know that in America we believe there's anything scarier than actually dying anymore.
Yeah, it's that, and or it's just this weird obsession with, like, we need to save every life. Every life matters. But it's like, but it's superficial, because, like we've talked about before, I don't think they care. I don't think they care. I really don't care. I don't think that most people care.
Most people,
I don't think the system cares. I don't think the media cares.
And this
it's
not a
care.
Left-wing, right-wing thing either. Like, I just think all of them, for the most part, don't care. Like, most of the people that complain about abortions really don't care about abortions. They're posturing. Most of the people that complain about Black Lives Matter, the majority of them really don't care. They're posturing. There's some that do. I'm not saying everyone that says those things don't care. I'm saying most of them don't. I'm saying most of them. Yeah. It's a political position that identifies them with a tribe, and they get more identity by saying they believe the thing than by what they actually believe on the inside.
Yeah.
JT, you look like you're really thinking. What are you thinking, bud?
Yeah, well, no, just when you said having a fear of dying, I don't know. I have a weird perspective on this, because 15 years ago I was told I didn't have much longer to live. I was very ill. Lived in the hospital for months. And so I have a weirder perspective, because, you know, my mom, you know, was at a point where she was calling my friends to come visit me, because I
think
I was going to make it out of the hospital. So to me, like, I am not that afraid of dying. I've come to that, coupled with working in the funeral industry, I've come to terms with the fact that I'm getting older and I'm going to die at some point. And so, you know, you better come to grips with that reality, no matter who you are. You know, tomorrow could be it. You know, you never know. You know, and that's a weird thing to tell people. Like, you sound like a freak.
Yeah.
You tell people that. But, I mean, but it's the honest truth. And you have to have that mindset. The last thing I want to do is be 80 and realize I've, like, wasted my entire life, you know? Getting, like, I'm not afraid that this coronavirus will kill me, because if it does kill me, I'm okay. Like, you know, what am I going to do about it? Like, if good Lord decides that this virus is going to take me out, nothing I can do. You know what I mean? Like, if it's my time to go, it's my time to go. And that's just kind of the way it is. I want to do things more for other people, keep other people healthy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't wear a mask for me. I'm wearing it because my grandma's 90 years old.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. That's pretty much why why I do it.
And I think that – and these are things that I can't tweet, or I wouldn't say this on Facebook, but this is my safe place. This is my once-a-week safe place.
Well, you can say
it.
No one's listening. So
no one's listening anyway. It's just the three of us, right?
So one of the things that irks me the most over the last, like, I don't know, 3 weeks, is the people on Twitter who tweet things like, you know, if it wasn't for you idiots not wearing masks, we would have football. And there's this, like, and this is a very, very popular take. It's not like a couple of people. It's like, it's a very large mindset right now. It seems there are people that actually think, these are adults that think that there's a correlation with, like, masks. The moment we started wearing masks, right, and, like, cases and
social,
you know,
decisions.
You know what I mean? And I just – let me try to explain. So if you watch, you know, Fauci, and not just Fauci, but, like, all of the experts, like, in March, it takes someone like Fauci, right? It takes someone like Dr. Fauci to formulate a medical opinion or advice. It takes them years, decades, research, studies. It takes them a lot of time and energy and life to come to some sort of recommendation.
And
a lot
of data as well.
And, like, a lot of data.
That changes varies. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when I see Dr. Fauci and all the other experts and the WHO YouTube channel, like, back in March, saying that masks don't really do anything, guys. They give you kind of a false sense of security. If you're taking care of someone who's sick, then sure, wear a mask. That's why healthcare workers wear masks. That's why surgeons wear masks, right?
Yeah.
But if you're walking around in public with a mask, it's not doing anything, right? So when he says that in March, I don't look at that as like just some guy just saying this thing. I look at that as a highly qualified doctor recommending this thing because he's had years of stuff to get him to recommend that thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then when I see the same guy, like 3 weeks later with a Nationals mask on and getting all politically correct and basically going in whatever direction a certain party's going, I have a hard time.
Well,
and, I really do.
And see, what for me the hard time becomes, okay, were you manipulating me the first time to not buy masks so that more workers that needed them could get them? And if so, that questions your validity on anything you say from now on. Are you trying to manipulate me? Or sure. Did the data change dramatically all of a sudden, and suddenly you find out masks work far more effective than you thought 2 months ago? And if so, where did that data come from? Can you please show me that data and explain to me why it changed your opinion in 2 months so drastically? You know,
not even 2 months. Not even 2 months.
Oh, I know.
And,
right.
And what I'm saying is, like, you know, you can look at the CDC. The CDC did this exhaustive research thing in 2019 about masks, and they were like, you know, they don't really do much from our studies. We can't really tell. One of the reasons being is because most people that wear masks, it's not fitted to your face. It's not like a custom fit, you know, face mask for your face. You know, so it's like, what I'm saying
and
is.
And the three of us, let's be honest, like, we wear masks and we're probably, unless me and you and JT decide we actually are willing to shave our face and wear the mask tight against our skin, it's probably not going to do much. I mean, because, and they literally have said that, like, if you have a beard, you're supposed to shave it if you're going to wear a mask. And I mean, I haven't been willing to do that, you know?
Yeah. Right. I guess what I'm saying is to my, you know, and I'm just a dingus. I'm a replaceable mm-hmm. podcaster. I am not qualified to probably talk about any of this crap, but to my caveman brain, it's like, okay, you have all these years and data to formulate this opinion, and then it changes immediately.
Yeah.
And it seemed political. Yeah, it just did.
It
seemed political.
It does.
And I want to say this too, because I think a lot of people, because of my Facebook, think that I'm like this anti-masker. I'm not really anti-masker. I don't think the government should make you do that. And I don't think that it's the same thing as seatbelts, because, you know, we can go down a data rabbit hole, but if you're not wearing a seatbelt and you go through a windshield, you're like 100% going to die. If you're not wearing a mask and you get COVID, like 99.9% chance you're going to be okay, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you're over the age of whatever. So I'm not anti-masker. I just don't think the government should make you do it. And I wear one when appropriate. But deep down, I do think it's silly.
Yeah. And I get it. I think – so this is one other thing, and we'll kind of wrap up on this. We'll talk – maybe we'll talk some more baseball tomorrow on tomorrow's show. But I do think there's this, Josh, and I think this is a big part of the national conscience. Right now, Americans feel totally out of control, and we're not used to having to admit we don't have control of something. We never do, but we – like the illusion that we do. We like the illusion that we control our lives and that the decisions we make actually matter. COVID has ripped all that control away from pretty much everyone. So wearing a mask makes us feel like we have some little shard of control over our life, even if we don't. I don't know if that's a bad thing. It's very much a psychological thing. That maybe I can understand why some people are so passionate about it, because they're grasping at any straw they possibly can to have some kind of control in a year where the fact that we're all out of control has been very obvious. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But I think you are giving people more credit, I think, with that. Now, I think there are some people that are like that, all right? But I think And maybe it's because I'm jaded and I live in Boone with a bunch of just complete assholes, because I don't know. Most people that I know in Boone aren't wearing a mask. I really think that most people in Boone are wearing a mask because they are just complete idiots and want to shout and like tell the other people that they're stupid.
But that's not different. That's the control. It's the illusion that they can control by controlling other people and their response to COVID. Like, somehow magically, mm-hmm. we could all make COVID go away if we would all just wear a mask. That's the illusion. Can control this thing if we would just do this. On the right wing side,
and it was lockdown.
On the right wing side, it's the same way. If everyone would have just bought into the hydroxychloroquine thing early on, we could have controlled this. Like, and I don't think anybody's wrong. Like, masks sometimes probably does cut down on transmission. I think hydroxychloroquine does sometimes significantly help cases. It doesn't always. It does sometimes. It's like we're looking for absolutes in a world that doesn't operate by absolutes, you know? And for me as a Christian, this is the gospel. And I know, like, we try not to get too preachy on the show a lot of times. But for me, the gospel is this, that God looks at my individual situation. And because I'm connected to him, he helps me make the decisions that I need to make for today, for the next hour, for the next minute, for the next year, all those things. And I follow the way he leads. And the way he leads me may be different than the way he leads you, because he knows my story and he knows your story. And those are sometimes different. And we need different things, and we need to do different things based off of our story. And that's nuance. And that's hard to teach, because we like absolutes. We like concrete law that says, do this, do this, do this, and you won't get killed. Yeah. And God said, yeah, but the law kills you eventually. But the Spirit gives life. And that life is that he leads you step by step into the thing you're called to do and in the situations you're called into. You know, as preachy, I realize it, but that's kind of like, I feel like that's the thing America's missing, is the ability to recognize individualized situations and recognize Franklin County, Georgia, that has a population of 20,000 people total, is not under the same situation as New York City that has 20,000 people in a single square block. You know, like it's different. Mm-hmm. It's nuanced, and we don't know how to talk about it. It's the same reason we can't have conversations about Black Lives Matter. It's the same reason we can't have conversations about policing.
You know,
because no one has nuance, you know, and ability to recognize those things.
I think that so many people do, and I think people that don't have a podcast, people
sure,
don't have
sure, okay, yeah, a that's YouTube unfair channel. Of me to say that. Yeah,
yeah, true. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there are so many people that subscribe to what you just said, and they're just not being heard, and they're checked out. I think a lot of them are, rightfully so. I really think that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think most Americans are smart enough to know that, you know, even when they're watching the news back in April, right, that like, okay, Manhattan's a little bit different than like Cedartown, Georgia.
Yeah, it's why we have an electoral college, you know? that all the people in LA don't make decisions for people in Georgia, you know? it's weird. Yeah. What are you thinking, JT? We'll wrap it up on your thoughts. You know?
I saw a documentary on masks not too long ago, and the guy started wearing one and went all crazy, and a lot of weird stuff happened. His face turned green. It's crazy. I highly recommend. My kids loved it. But yeah, it was really informative of the dangers of putting on a mask.
What did it come out in the 90s, like the early 90s?
Yeah.
I think or the mid-90s, like 94.
Yeah, I had the guy from Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. That's
It was good. It really opened my eyes to a lot of things, you know, about masks and why you probably, you know, why I choose not to wear one, because I saw what happened to him.
Oh, somebody stop me. This episode's got to end. Fellas, that's going to do it for today's episode of Knock Combination Podcast Show. If you enjoyed the show today, give us a shout out on Twitter or Facebook. Let us know what you think about masks. Let us know what you think about why the world is the way it is. Let us know what you thought about Jim Carrey in the mask. If you would like to join the nation, you can do so and become a patron, a citizen of the nation. You can do so at patreon.com/knockhomination, where you can three different tiers of citizenship. You can get a shout out on the show. You can get a sticker for your room, for your car, for your wife. And you can even get a t-shirt if you'd like to. And support the show. We appreciate it. Patrons are what makes this thing go around, and we appreciate you for that. Be safe out there. We love you. we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Smoking!
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement-level podcast. Nakahoma Nation is brought to you by Nakahoma Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation. For new episodes and content, visit nakahomanation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Auctions Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.